So in talking about Augustine, I want to actually start quickly by conjuring up Plato again for just a minute for purposes of comparison. These are two quick texts, not from sections that I sent, but other parts of Plato's Laws, Book 4, 715 A and B. He's talking about the way politics works typically in conventional, ordinary cities of the time, as people understood them. And he said this, the Athenian stranger says, the ruling offices become matters for battle, and those who are victorious take over the city's affair to such an extent that they refuse to share any of the rule with those who lost out, with either them or their descendants. And the two sides live, keeping watch on one another, lest someone ever get into office who might remember the old wrongs and start a revolt. These we presumably declare now not to be real regimes, nor do we declare any laws correct that are not laid down for the sake of what is common to the whole city. Where the laws exist for the sake of some, we declare the inhabitants to be partisans rather than citizens. That's what typically goes on and what he's concerned about. The other one, again, concerns the relationship of the laws to the more perfect kind of city that is imagined in one respect in the Republic. And interestingly, in the Laws in Book 5, he says that the city there is a second best city, second best. In the best city, there would be far more perfect, a far more perfect kind of unity, he goes on to say, where he says this. 739C, if every device has been employed to exclude all of what is called the private from all aspects of life, if insofar as possible a way has been devised to make common somehow the things that are by nature private, such as the eyes and the ears and the hands, so that they seem to see and hear and act in common, if again everyone praises and blames in unison as much as possible, delighting in the same things and feeling pain at the same things, if with all their might they delight in the laws that aim at making the city come as close as possible to unity, then no one will ever set down a more correct or better definition than this of what constitutes the extreme as regards virtue. Such a city is inhabited presumably by gods or children of gods, and they dwell in gladness leading such a life. A city of gods, or children of gods, as distinct from Augustine's city of God, which is expressly contrasted with the earthly city, which from Augustine's perspective looks a lot more like that first situation that the Athenian stranger was describing, at least conventionally. And so when we think about Augustine, it seems here we have a specifically Christian political theory. And it, again, intuitively, we think this should get us somewhere further than we got with Plato, right? That's what we would expect, not just useful doctrines, but something closer to truth that shows us more of what's possible and more about the way that we should live. But for precisely the reason that in Augustine we have a distinctively Christian political thinker, there is this problem, and there's really no avoiding it. There really isn't much about politics in the gospel. It just doesn't say very much specific about politics. Now, this is a little bit different from the sacred texts of Judaism and Islam, both of which in a certain respect present themselves as law codes. But that is not what the New Testament presents itself as, and that's not the way that it operates. And this meant that the early Christian thinkers, the early Christians and then the early Christian thinkers, they didn't have a kind of ready-made political theory. They had a small number of gospel texts. You know all of them, you can count them almost on one hand, that refer to political things, but nothing like a political theory. And so they had to work that out as part of their theological thinking. And And they had to work it out in relation to the civilization that they lived in, to the pagan civilization that they were surrounded by, and by the intellectual materials that they had to work with. And basically, what emerged from this process is, I think you can say, three options that the early Christians came up with. One, I think you could call a kind of Christian anti-politics. If you think about an early Christian thinker like Lactantius, I think, you know, there are a few other ones, but certain of the early Christians simply had no interest in thinking about politics. They thought it was simply irrelevant to their lives, in part, only in part, but in part, because they expected the second coming to happen very soon. And thinking about political order and the maintenance of political societies was a low priority item under those circumstances. A second option that emerges is what you could call Christian imperialism. And the famous thinker who formulates this view is Eusebius of Caesarea. And there the issue becomes you're living in the Roman Empire. And in order for the Christian order to become political, the solution is kind of simple in a way. You just convert the emperor, and now you've got a Christian empire. And when this happens with Constantine, it seems like this solution has been achieved. And Eusebius is the kind of thinker who spins all of this out. And it's not irrelevant that in talking about Constantine in particular, Eusebius sees Constantine as kind of like a Platonic philosopher king. He quotes the Republic, and he says that Constantine is a philosopher, a wise man, who can rule like a philosopher king. And so that's a kind of second possibility. The third possibility is the one that I would associate with Augustine, however, and I would call that, I mean, I don't have a very good label for that, but in a certain respect, I'd call it a kind of Christian moderation or even a kind of Christian classicism, which holds that political life is not going to necessarily end anytime soon, but also that the a Christian emperor is not necessarily a distinctive solution to the problem, but that there are generalizations and stable patterns about political life that in many cases the classical thinkers discovered, people like Plato and Aristotle and others, Cicero is particularly important for Augustine, and those patterns continue to operate and need to be recontextualized within Christian theological categories. And that kind of Christian moderation or Christian classicism, it seems to me, is what becomes the central line of the Christian tradition, formulated initially by Augustine and then handed on, changed in some ways, but essentially the project handed on and comes to its really quite fuller flowering in the Middle Ages, and especially in the thought of Aquinas. And I think you can see elements of that view in one of the texts that you have, which is a quite a famous letter number 138 to a man named Marcellinus, who was a Christian Roman official in Carthage and a friend of Augustine's. And in a certain way, he symbolizes the perils of political life in his own person, since he was executed in 413 for getting involved in some unpleasant political matters. But what Augustine tells Marcellinus is not that you shouldn't be involved in politics, but also that you shouldn't expect politics to achieve what only the church can achieve. Rather, he says, you should contribute in a conscientious way to the maintenance, the establishment of a kind of just order and the maintenance of that order for the sake of concord, a kind of peace that exists in the empire. And that, in fact, even the Roman pagans should value, that they should even value the political participation of Christians, since their actions in politics are not at odds with civic virtue, but that they increase it in various ways. And there's one bit of that text that I want to highlight, which... Yeah, it's one paragraph of that letter where Augustine is writing there and says, faith, hope, and charity make us citizens in that republic. the heavenly republic, as long as we journey far from it, we endure if we are not able to correct those who want the republic that the first Romans founded and enlarged by means of their virtues to stand firm by permitting vices to go unpunished. Even if they did not have the true piety toward the true God that could lead them into the eternal city through salvific religion, those first Romans preserved a certain sort of uprightness that could suffice for founding, enlarging, and preserving the earthly city. God thus showed in the most wealthy and illustrious Roman Empire how great the power of civil virtues without true religion is, so that it might be understood that when true religion is added, human beings are made citizens of another city, a city whose king is truth and whose law is charity, whose boundary is eternity. But they add to that. I mean, they change the character of the earthly city in many ways and benefit it in ways that he thinks people should see. And this perspective that Augustine shows here is more powerful in than on the city of God, which, again, I put in book 19, also just a little bit from book 6, because there Augustine has those famous categories of different kinds of theology, poetic theology and civil theology and a natural or philosophical theology, which I put in because of the text from Laws 10 that we talked about last time. He knows all about that. He knows all about philosophical theology, and he knows all about the civil religion of the ancient city and contrasts those things specifically to true theology, to Christian theology. But really what I'm most concerned about is what's in book 19, which gives, I think, the most concise statement of Augustine's understanding of political things. And I'll just quote one text from it, and we can talk more about right, so this is in chapter 26. For the time being, it is advantageous to us also that this people should have such peace in this life. For while the two cities are intermingled, we also make use of the peace of Babylon. We do so even though the people of God is delivered from Babylon by faith, so that it is only for a while that we are pilgrims in their midst. Again, it's a famous text, and it alludes to a number of other things that Augustine says in the City of God about the character of political life in that Roman context that he's in, which is that it is a very limited establishment of temporal order, which benefits both the Christian and non-Christian citizens of that political order. And it is valuable to maintain, even though it's understood to be relative to the true peace, not the peace of Babylon, but the true peace that exists only in the heavenly city, only in the heavenly city. And so his recommendation there is to live within that peace, to maintain it, to engage with it in a way, not to condemn it even necessarily, even while understanding its limitations and weaknesses. And then just one other quotation, and then I'll finish. And that's from chapter 17 of book 19. Yeah, really the whole thing is relevant, but I'll just read one section, the second paragraph of chapter section 17. Thus, both kinds of men and both kinds of household make common use of those things which are necessary to this mortal life. But each has its own very different end in using them. And also the earthly city, which does not live by faith, desires an earthly peace, and it establishes an ordered concord of civic obedience and rule in order to secure a kind of cooperation of men's wills for the sake of attaining the things which belong to this mortal life. Obviously, the heavenly city is very different, but it's where people live in their pilgrim condition. And so those are the main points I just want to make by way of a kind of introduction. There's a lot that we can talk about here. And I think it's an opportunity in some respects, these questions have already emerged a little bit, but for people to bring them up specifically, questions about the contemporary liberal political order that we live in. I mean, in one case, it's easy to see the differences between that and a Christian political order. On the other hand, given Augustine's rather restricted sense of political order, You could also ask how different it really is, and specifically what the Christian contribution to that order would be on Augustine's understanding. I mean, that's just one possibility, but it doesn't by any means preclude people bringing up whatever they want to bring up. So I'll stop now and we can talk.